This message comes from NPR sponsor, Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. Next up is the Australian actor Sarah Snook. Odds are, if you know Sarah, it's for her role on Succession, the latest zeitgeisty TV drama on HBO. Sarah plays Siobhan Roy, but to her friends and family, it's just Shiv. Shiv, like what you'd stab somebody in the back with. Succession follows the Roy family. They own a giant conservative media conglomerate called Waystar Royco. The family's patriarch, Logan Roy, is getting older and he can't run the company forever. So who will he name to take over? And what are they willing to do to be that person? Or will he just, you know, blow the whole thing up out of spite? Like pretty much every character on Succession, Shiv is complicated. She's cunning and fragile, selfish and vulnerable, principled, but not too principled. Sometimes she sits above the fray, letting her brothers squabble over the family business. Other times, she's right in the middle of the fight. Snook has earned an Emmy nomination for her role as Shiv. She's now up for a Golden Globe for the same part. Linda Holmes, the wonderful host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, talked with Sarah in 2020 about what it's like to play one of the most fascinating, complex, and confounding characters on TV today. But before we get into that, let's listen to a clip from Succession. Like I said earlier, Shiv spends most of the first season kind of above the fray, distancing herself from the company. But then at the beginning of season two, her dad offers her the top job. Let's listen.
Dad, I don't think so.
Really? Because if there's really no hope of you coming in, I'd rather cash out.
Look, if this is the way that we're having this conversation anyway, then yeah, fine, sell.
Fine. I'll do it. Right now. I'll tweet. The markets will move, and that'll be that.
Bull.
You don't care if I sell?
Don't be a jerk, Dad.
You want to do it?
Yes. Yes.
Sarah Snook, welcome to Bullseye.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What a great clip. I want to come back to that scene in a little bit, but first I think you're obligated to start every conversation right now with how are things?
Yeah. It's good. I mean, I'm good. It's a tough time for everybody in a lot of ways, but everybody that I speak to, no matter what industry it seems, is like really sort of purposefully finding like the optimism and the positivity in the times. And that's like, what a gift.
Yeah. You know,
for us all to be doing that, for us still to have the capacity to do that.
It must have seemed like a good idea at the time to connect yourself to United States entertainment industry. I want to just to take a moment for people who are currently shocked to find out that you are Australian and in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get it, mate.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe the rest of the cast for your next season can just come to you and it can be the Australian season. They'll go to a big ranch. It'll be an American television version of Australia, so it'll have all the koalas and kangaroos and all that good
and
stuff.
And like every Australian actor in it completely, like just as a random person at the cafe. Like Margot Robbie just lives down there, and Russell Crowe is the owner of the ranch, and they're all mates.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Shiv. Did you go through, for people who aren't familiar with Shiv, her name is Siobhan, but she's always called Shiv, except perhaps by her father. Named after a knife, which is not terribly subtle, but great, I think, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. When we first got together doing the pilot, we didn't realize it's like Roman, Shiv.
Connor.
Yeah, Connor, Shiv, Siobhan. Kendall. Norman, you know, that's like angry. But then, and Kendall, like, Ken. Oh, knowledge, like wisdom. I don't know if that was on purpose, but
it's a great set of names. Did you go through a kind of a normal audition process for Shiv?
Somewhat, yes. I self-taped from Australia, and so I put something down with my friend at home and was very reticent to do so because I thought, you know, it was out of my league and out of possibility of me getting it. So I'm, you know, endlessly grateful to my friend for making me put the tape down. But then, yeah, they asked if I would come over to do a final self-tape, sorry, final screen test in the States. And yeah, did it that way.
Why didn't you think you would get it?
Because I'm just so not, me personally, as Sarah, is so far from Shiv Roy that I was in this, I don't know how to expand myself to fit that. I don't know if I know what that infinite wealth kind of person is like. I don't know if I like that person. It just wasn't in my, I didn't feel like it was comfortably in my wheelhouse. I was just being chicken, you know.
Yeah.
Just grow up, Sarah.
In the first season, it often seemed like Shiv was the most normal of her siblings. She's got her brother Kendall, who is kind of a collapsing mess in the first season. Her brother Roman is just kind of a dirtball in a lot of ways. Just really, really, really kind of a dirtball.
Yeah, yeah.
And her brother Connor is a weirdo living out in the desert. And she sort of seems like the most healthy person. She's in politics instead of business. What is it like to be in an ensemble where you're maybe playing the closest thing to a normal, healthy person with all these very big kind of nutty things going on all around?
It was difficult at first because like in comedy, you have the kind of the buffoon and then the kind of quote unquote, like the straight guy, like the person, the fall guy, the person who's
right.
Not the fall guy. He's the person, well, they're the person who, they remain the audience's in,
right.
I guess, sure. The touchstone. And I felt like sometimes I had to be that and yet wanted to be able to lean into or hide behind comedy or all the sort of like the character points that they had that felt bigger that they had to obviously fill and make realistic, but I didn't feel like I had that. So I wondered what my point was, I guess. Like, what's she doing there? And then realized that it is so much about Shiv is observation and watching and being that kind of feline thing going on in the corner, just like mm-hmm. waiting to pounce at the right point.
Yeah. And she did always have going for her, I think, particularly in terms of comedy, her marriage, because you can't talk about Shiv and not talk about Tom. Shiv's husband is, how do we describe Tom, played by the great Matthew McFadyen? How do we describe Tom?
Well, Tom is a sycophantic little gnat in a way. Like he's there's so much about him that is slimy and wormy and small, and yet it's in the outward casing of Matthew McFadyen, which is charming, handsome, beautiful, strong, tall, like all those kinds of leading man qualities, and yet
right.
the character is the opposite in some ways, which I love because he's just such a, you know, he's a brilliant actor, and for him getting a chance to play something so different from what he usually would be cast in or could play, you know, quite easily. Yeah, it's a lot more interesting to sink your teeth into. And
yeah.
Tom, I think one of the clearest things that occurred to us in second season was that obviously Tom is a bully because he bullies Greg. And then, okay, well, bullies usually are being bullied by someone else at home. Okay, well, that's probably Shiv. All right, well, we'll forgive Tom because he's being bullied by Shiv. And
sure.
then you're like, well, Shiv's being bullied by Logan, really. So we'll forgive Shiv that. And then it just goes up the chain. Everyone
yeah.
should be nice to each other, but that's not good TV.
There's always a delight to me in finding out that people I think of as really good, like wonderful dramatic actors are that funny.
Yeah.
Because Tom to me is such a... He's such a funny character, And I think Shiv, again, you know, often it's not explicit that she's explicitly hilarious in these scenes with Tom, but the scenes are wonderfully funny.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And so much about the writers, they calibrate that relationship so well in that it has to still, yes, it is funny. And yes, it is kind of like, why is Shiv with Tom? Mm-hmm. But it still has to be real. Like, we still have to believe, though it's unbelievable, we still have to believe it somehow.
Even more with Linda Holmes and Succession's Sarah Snook still to come. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Right now, we're listening back to Linda Holmes' 2020 interview with Sarah Snook. Sarah plays Shiv on the TV drama Succession. The show just wrapped up its third season, and it's streaming now on HBO. Let's get back into their conversation.
So when we talk about comedy, I don't know if Australian audiences are like this at all, but American audiences are often kind of obsessed with the idea that actors improvise everything and are kind of obsessed with the idea that if it seems natural and funny and conversational, the actors must have made it up on the spot. But as I understand it, you do some improvising on Succession.
We do. But it would be a great disservice and an untruth to say that it's not written supremely well, you know, like, yeah. Those writers work for months and then we come in and say, we just improvise a lot. And the writers are like, oh my God. No, you don't. We do.
Where do you do the most of that kind of work?
It seems to be bookenders. Like, so for instance, if we entered a scene and there was like the hellos that would happen at the beginning of a dinner, all of that, the writers are not going to write that in sort of very, very specific moments, because that's the thing that fills the atmosphere around.
Right.
Yes, there might be an amazing line that Kieran says because he's a very funny man. He might say something that's outrageous that just makes sense for Roman to have said then, and that might make the edit. And, you know, you're using all the colors from the palette. You have to kind of fill the outside details as well. And, you know, the writers create this really tight scaffolding that then you can launch around, I guess. And if improvising comes from it, it's only because they gave you the clues of where to go in the first place.
So Shiv's first season kind of builds up to her wedding, which is this very kind of beautiful, theoretically wonderful, special, elegant affair. And then you leave Shiv, and when we come back, they've among other things, really changed the visual presentation of Shiv between seasons.
Yeah.
They gave you the haircut heard round the world, I think, to the kind of the sleek bob of the professionally tough woman, and changed the wardrobe a lot. Did that change what it felt like to be Shiv?
Definitely. And that sort of the confluence of the writing focusing more on what Shiv's sort of ambitious side within the family structure.
Well, yes, there is the writing. There is the writing, too, in addition to the hair and pants.
No, but the embodiment, which the, you know, hair and costume knew, so they wanted to make sure that that was being reflected visually. And that, as an actor, that helps enormously because you feel like you're really sitting inside the character then. It's not not so much of a bridge to cross or between you. But, I mean, I feel like Shiv is one of those people who, she's a box ticker. You know, she's sort of got her 5-year plan, her 10-year plan, her 3-month plan, like weekly planner, and all the goals that she's going to achieve within that. And box ticking in a way is like, right, find the person who in some ways, yes, looks good on paper, but also looks good in photographs, to marry. Yes, he's a bit of a but I can control him and he'll never, you know. I think Logan's very accurate in 7 when he says, you'll marry a man fathoms beneath you because you're afraid to fail. That's, ooh, that cuts deep.
Uh-huh.
There's a truth to that, but it doesn't mean that they don't love each other and have a way in which they relate that is meaningful between them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then once the wedding's done, it's like, right.
Right.
Moving on. Done.
I've asked myself so many times whether I think Shiv loves him.
Mm.
But you think Shiv loves him.
Yeah, I do. And in her own way, I think.
I was going to say in the Shiv way.
Yeah, I think what's the way of, like, you know, Byron or Keats or some sort of, like, romantic high romance poet. No, she doesn't. And no, she doesn't, because she probably would never know how to feel that love, because that's so vulnerable and risky. And I don't think the Roys are naturally, there's a softness and a gentleness to that kind of love. And so I think she's the kind of person who loves in the way that she decides what love is. Do you know? Uh-huh. Not in the room. And even seeing it on, because you know, you'd be exposed to seeing it in films and seeing, you know, different versions of love. It's a bit like, well, the looking down upon that kind and not seeing it as useful, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. It's transactional for her.
Yeah. Right? It's interesting too, because we come here back to the clip that we played at the top of the show in which Shiv is offered the opportunity to take over the company by her father. If you believe him, she's being offered the chance to take over the company. If you don't believe him, which I never believe him, then it's something else entirely is happening. But she really kind of jumps in and says, yes, I want to do this. Whereas in the first season, as we talked about, she had kind of been in politics. She seemed like she was trying to kind of stay away from the family business. Did you feel like that was a big change for her? Or do you think the seeds of that, as you understood that character, were always present for her to want to then reach out and be part of the company?
Yeah, I think it's both, to be honest. I think we're really good as humans at deceiving ourselves, like the things that we can hide from ourselves, even in plain sight. Like, you could know something about yourself or know something about what you want, but not really admit it to yourself until it's right there in front of you. And if you don't take this chance now, then it'll never happen again. I think her, in terms of her ambition of politics, yes, that's real. And yes, that's the thing that she had wanted to do and needed to do to prove her own worth to herself as well as to her family. But the moment that it gets offered that she could beat her brothers, she could beat the top of the family, like she could, there's an optic side of being in that family and at the top of that family in the CEO sort of position, that is never going to be unseen by Shiv, the, you know, her entire life, like back as a 7-year-old, as a 10-year-old growing up, it would be, that's the thing to aim for. But if I don't think I'm going to get there, I'm not going to reduce myself by aiming for it and failing. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Right.
And that's like, I love that. And, you know, and Jesse said in the first season, there was a scene that came up and he was like, I went up to him afterwards and was like, do you think that Shiv wants, like, this doesn't seem to make sense. Doesn't Shiv want to be the top dog, like top job, top dog kind of thing? And he goes, no, I don't think so. Huh. And he may well have known what he wanted to do for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
But that's genius to tell me that, because it hides it from myself even. There's no, like, I'm playing, like, you know, an eyebrow going up here or doing something like that. It's like, it's so hidden in prismatic kind of form, like we are as humans doing that.
Yeah.
That when it comes out, it's just, yeah.
Yeah. Cause you don't, you, he wouldn't want you to be playing to it too much. Cause that's why it surprises suckers like me. Cause you're so surprised by it when she does it.
And suckers like me. So when he says it, it's like, and you have to follow what the scene says. And yeah. It seems that she's into this. So, all right, I guess we're going there. Make it make sense.
We'll wrap up with Sarah Snook in just a minute. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, the automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy explains how Betterment's technology helps investors better understand and save on taxes.
So taxes are a real cost of investing, as are fees. Understanding your after-tax, after-fee returns is really what's important for investors. An example would be when you buy and sell securities frequently, you can pay a lot of taxes because short-term capital gains, meaning I bought it and I sold it fairly quickly, have higher taxes than long-term capital gains. Our technology in particular will tell you what the tax implication of a particular move you'd like to make is going to be before you make that move so that you're making it with full transparency.
Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed.
I'm Judge John Hodgman.
And I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne.
10 years ago, I came on Jordan Jesse Go and judged my first dispute. Is chili a soup? It's a stew, obviously.
The judge has dispensed a decade of justice. He's the one person wise enough to answer the really important questions. Like, should you hire a mime to perform at your own funeral?
After they cry, I want them to laugh.
Do you really need a tank full of jellyfish in your den?
They smell like living creatures decaying.
Only if they are decaying.
Yeah, which they will be.
Real people, real justice, real comedy.
Winner of the Webby Award for Best Comedy Podcast.
The Judge John Hodgman Podcast, every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. We're listening to Linda Holmes' interview with Sarah Snook. She plays Shiv on HBO's Succession.
I want to talk about the last episode of the second season, which is, of course, where we left these characters. Family empire in crisis. The patriarch, Logan, was looking for someone who could publicly take the fall. He referred to that lovingly as a skull to wave. And potentially could wind up in legal trouble. The family goes off on a yacht. They have maybe the world's worst brunch where they discuss at length who is going to be this. Oh, God, me too. I call it the Roy family murder breakfast. the blood sacrifice. There's this moment when Shiv's brother Roman suggests that they give up Tom. And Shiv sort of goes along saying right in front of her husband that he does make a kind of a compelling patsy. And they don't really reach a decision at that time. But later, when Shiv and Tom are alone, he tells her that because of that conversation, as well as for some other reasons, he's not feeling very confident about their marriage. And she's just devastated. And to me, that's such a curious combination of scenes because she's so cold to him at the murder breakfast. And then she's so wounded that he seems to be unhappy. How do you interpret that? A turn like that between that pair of scenes? Because I know you can either think about it in terms of, I want to get at what the writers intend to be going on with Shiv, or you can think about it in terms of, what do I think as the actor who knows Shiv perhaps the best thinks is going on with Shiv? Is it both? Is it more one than the other? Because to me, that's a really, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what was going on with Shiv.
I think what I really like about how the writers create is that nothing is ever binary or set in stone. It's all very grayscale in a lot of ways. There's potential for it to go one way or the other, or for things to be two things at once. And for Shiv in that, I think, again, she's so deceptive to herself even, that she can be so unfeeling and unkind and then be struck by a real moment, by a real vulnerability from her husband that cracks her open again and goes, hey, remember you're human. Remember, you know, not everything is a game. Not everything is transactional. Not everything is, you know, in pursuit of a goal like you've been taught. Remember that these are you're two humans in a marriage. And there's, I think that for me made me realize how much she needs him, but how much that scares her and how well she's able to hide that from herself. I think hearing that she does make somebody so unhappy that they could leave.
Yeah.
Is so like, I mean, yeah. I don't think she's ever been dumped. You know, I don't think she's that woman who's never been dumped. And if she was, she would say that, well, she's been cheating on him for years, like weeks. You know, like she would,
right.
She would find a way to get the power back. And in that, it's so exposing and so simple. Like the sad I'd feel without you is, you know, worse than, is not as bad as the sad I feel with you. Ouch.
I want to, before we let you go, I want to talk about one more. I want to play one more clip, which is also Shiv and Logan. This is after, as we just talked about, the Shiv is very cold to Tom, but then she feels very bad about Tom potentially wanting to leave her. And she has a conversation with her father because he is still throwing around the idea of potentially having Tom be the, the one who takes the fall. And Shiv here is absolutely at a crossroads, and she talks about what they're going to do with Logan, played, of course, by the great Brian Cox. Let's play the clip.
I just think that Tom doesn't deserve it. And it doesn't work for the rest of the world. I don't.
So, what do you think? It's the sort of tough choice people need to be able to make. People who would be very senior people.
I can't choose that.
No. No.
Just not,
Oh.
I mean, oh, so bad. Because he's really directly asking her to be less human in order to be successful in business.
Uh-huh.
I would hope that society, as a general rule, is moving to being more human in to be successful in business. I mean, for instance, like, or in policy and government, Jacinda Ardern, her approach to this moment right now would be, I would say, more human and more sort of understanding of humanity, society, that kind, you know, being maternal has been thrown around in that sort of sense.
Mm-hmm.
That and what is the outcome? There's been a lot more safety. There's been a lot more sort of, okay, let's get back into return to work faster.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that business is sort of moving towards that. But this is like, there is direct evidence in coming from Logan Roy of how otherwise business has operated in, you know, for the last however many years.
Well, Sarah Snook, this has been so much fun. Succession is available, HBO, HBO Max, all of your streaming options. You can buy it, you can rent it. You got to catch up with it. It's a lot of fun, Succession. Sarah Snook, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Snook, interviewed by the one and only Linda Holmes in 2020. You can stream all three seasons of Succession now on HBO. Our thanks to Linda for talking with Sarah. Linda is one of the hosts of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. You should listen to that. Linda is also a novelist, and she has a new book on the way. Loved her first one. Looking forward to the second. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Here in Los Angeles, I am headed off to take a stick shift driving lesson. I've only driven automatics. Please don't judge me. But hopefully we'll learn quick. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producer is Jesus Ambrosio. Production fellows at Maximum Fun are Richard Roby and Valerie Moffitt. We get help from Casey O'Brien. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is Huddle Formation, recorded by the group The Go Team. Thanks to them and to their label, Memphis Industries. You can keep up with our show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We post our interviews there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.